thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to That Great Business Show, episode 24 of Ireland's best business podcast, posting on the 5th of March, 2021. I am Conal O'Moran. Yes, we've now posted 24 episodes, almost half a year's worth. Where did that time go? A huge reaction to last week's episode featuring Luella Morton, co-founder of five-year-old Test Reach, with many, many people asking, where did that incredible company come from? They're running exams virtually for some of the biggest professional bodies in the world, and Luella says the business is only at the starting blocks. And you can listen back to E23 just by going on to Spotify and or iTunes or whatever, and she's there. So what incredible hidden businesses do we have on this episode? We have a mathematician, turned statistician, turned chef, turned caterer, turned software designer, as you do. As our banks have realised, they have got to go digital. An Irish company is going gangbusters, helping banks and other businesses worldwide to do just that. We say we do business differently, and our third guest is going to make tax sound very interesting, especially if you're a contract employee. And employees don't quit jobs, they quit bosses, according to our fourth guest, whose business is developing the next generation of employee engagement software. All of this on Ireland's best business podcast. Do tell your friends about us, please. I had one person on to me during the week having discovered The Great Business Show, and he has promised he's sending a LinkedIn link to the show to his 1,000 plus connections there because he liked it so much. That is the stuff Team GBS, That Great Business Show, loves to hear. Now, Tara Beattie is one half of the founders of the business called The Caterers, which also has the brands SI Cafe and The Prep Sheet and Munch 2. We'll get to that in a second. Though she says she didn't like it, it's pretty prominent on their website that she, Tara, started life as a statistician, having trained as a mathematician, which possibly partly explains why she has ended up in catering, running six cafes, amongst other things, before COVID did for that. But a true entrepreneur doesn't lie down, so during lockdown, she has turned her knowledge to creating a really interesting software for caterers. That's the Prep Sheet, and she wants to tell Team GBS and the world about it. Welcome to That Great Business Show, Tara.
Thanks, Connor.
You hated statistics or mathematics. Is that what you told me?
Well, I didn't hate it. I just couldn't do anything else.
I grab headlines. Do you just work with me on this one?
It was the only thing I could do. So it wasn't a by choice. It was a by default that I ended up doing statistics.
If you ended up doing statistics, because this is going to be a theme for today, we had Amy Connolly on. She's sculpted by Amy, and I think she told me she got 580 points in her leaving cert. Did you do better?
No, I wasn't. That was my problem. I didn't really apply myself in school or college. So the only thing that came naturally...
You ended up doing maths.
Yeah, the only thing that came naturally was, maths and stats. So hence, I winged my way through 4 years of UCD and got out alive. I didn't have as much fun there as you did, but I got through it, and that's the main thing.
And you ended up indirectly in catering.
Yes.
Explain.
So when I left college, I didn't really know what a statistician did. I could hardly pronounce it, as you can tell. So I went off and I did a course in ISO 9000, and then I also applied for the Donnelly visa. So I got a job with Dell as a customer service agent, with a lot of recent graduates, and I also got a Donnelly visa. So I went to America and I worked for an RF manufacturer, which made parts for rockets, which I thought was really exciting, as you could tell. It was so exciting. And it was a family business and it was brilliant. And I did a year with them. But just before I went to America, I had started going out with my now husband, who was a chef, is a chef, and he didn't come to America. So I came home.
Oh.
And when I came home, then I got a job with an Irish company that did data storage. So it was called MTI, and I loved that job. It was in quality control. And one of the men that I worked for in there was the accountant, but he was into tech a little bit. And he kind of took me under his wing, and I used to do stuff for him and stuff for my boss. And then I moved to Intel. But the guy that
I've got around.
Quality management again. So I was kind of always into systems and processes and how we do things and control. And I loved listening to how people did their work and then kind of just asking them about it. And then with their help, we'd come up with mostly a better way. And the guy who kind of influenced me in that company, he went out on his own and he'd had his own startup, which was ERP software at the time, which was to manage your accounts. And I was never very good at accounts. And I thought of a story there, but that's too long. But it would show you how I was really bad at accounts. But he approached me and said, would you be interested? So I left Intel for his company.
That's a big jump because I presume Intel is and was a well-paid, permanent, pensionable,
I had shares, I had the works, but I didn't have excitement and the idea of doing what going
what
with
excites
him.
A statistician or a mathematician?
I just love the challenge, I suppose. I love listening to people and I love listening to problems and I love coming up with solutions. And I suppose that's maths in itself. When I said it out loud. So that's kind of what it's about. And that's what all business is about. And what I've learned in the last few years, specifically when I've gone outside of our business, is we all have problems and we all need solutions. And a process of some shape or form will help us get there.
So how did you end up, besides through your husband, catering, because you are a co-founder?
Yes. So then when I worked with this guy, Tony Dignam is his name. We had talked about opening a restaurant. Myself, my husband had just got married when I left Intel, and he came into the house and said, I've quit my job and we're opening a restaurant. And I was like, whoa, we didn't talk about it. So that's how we started. So we opened a little restaurant.
I bet you there was a row that night.
No, because I'd be very much roll with it. Look forward, not back is my motto. So we started the little restaurant. I still had my job. And it kind of just evolved from there. The restaurant got busier. I had to leave Tony and go work. Not had to, but I couldn't do both. And so I went with Brian full time in the restaurant. Then we had some employee. It was very difficult because of the Celtic Tiger. It was hard to get staff. We had been very fortunate. Le Cravan had closed for renovations. They lent us their team. They were amazing.
How come Le Cravan, which is one of Ireland's top restaurants, would give you or lend you their team? Yeah. Did you know them? Or?
Yeah. So Brian's background would have been with Le Cravan. Chapter One, Gibbo's, Thornton's. All of those famous Dublin restaurants, Le Coq Ardie, and we've been very fortunate. We've had some nice people on our side, and I think that really helps. So,
for those who don't know the history of restaurants in Dublin, Le Coq Ardie was Charlie Haughey's favorite restaurant.
That's right. And they all, and because of them, those connections, John Howard would have known Derry, and they kind of thought Brian started with one, moved to another, and then they moved them around the city back then. They probably do it now with a whole new team.
Yeah.
So they had been great mentors. So Derry would have helped on the food type, and Sally Ann would have helped me because I had no background in restaurants. So she was very patient and they were very kind with their time and their energy. So they lent us their team. Then they reopened and we decided, you know what? No, we'll take a break. We're not sure. So I went back into a nice pensionable job in Allianz, which is an insurance company. And Brian went to Chapter One. And we did that for about a year or so. And we thought, we miss it. We miss it so much. So we thought, how are we going to do this?
Odd? You know, the itch, isn't
it? Yeah, it is something there. And it's probably the control. It's the decision making. It's the problem solving. It's all of that. And it's great doing it for other people, but there's more of a buzz when you do it for yourself. So he built a little kitchen for the caterer. We said, we'll do catering. And we thought naively that, you know, a few dinner parties and a bit like Desperate Housewives, Brie Vandekamp, it's nothing like that. So after a few years, then we started.
So where was your little kitchen in that home?
At the end of the Nangar Road. Yeah.
Okay.
So he grew up on a farm. Yeah. So we built the kitchen on the side of the farm. Obviously got it registered and did everything above board. But yeah, so that's where we operated
out. Farm on the Nanga Road.
Yeah.
Again, that takes some thinking, doesn't it?
Yeah, proper old.
I presume
farm.
There ain't no farm there now.
There is a
big, block of flats.
A couple of data centers there now. Yeah. So we built it there. And that was in 2002 we built it. And then I suppose we grew slowly and, you know, as time went on a bit faster. And then we had a little recession. And so we kind of stabilized a little bit. We actually grew in the recession because we were in a wedding venue at the time. And again, quiet. We've always been very quiet. And I think that goes back to our restaurant. So in the restaurant, as you pointed out earlier, we would have had different types of people come in and you had to be very discreet. So we would have had clients and we would have had discretion.
Go on, name names.
No, ever, never, never. Even my poor mum has asked, it will never come out of my mouth.
Anybody huge? I don't mean physically. I mean,
No, there would have been. And it was more the indiscretions that they would publicly do was quite unusual to me. I never got that. They might come in one night with a wife and come in the next night with a partner.
Okay.
And you had to act like, you know, you hadn't seen them all week when you might have seen them two or three times. And then there'd be people who just wanted peace and quiet and they knew that they wanted a corner and they didn't want anybody to know they were there. So we would have had some of them. So throughout our business, we've always been very discreet and maybe that we didn't grow so fast because we were very quiet. So we took over the catering in a venue in September 2009. And we went from doing about four weddings a year to about 120 weddings a year.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which was great.
It's a bloody great, yes, but it's a bit of a jump.
Yeah. Well, we were ready because we had all the systems. That's the thing. We had everything ready.
Back to
prep sheets.
Okay.
Because that started in 2007. So we were growing all this time and we wanted more control on the money, like how much was everything costing us exactly and what calories.
That is absolutely essential, I presume, particularly in big volume catering.
Yeah, because if you don't know your cost, you don't know how much to sell it for. And when you're doing event catering, every event is different. So, and you could have an event for 100 people today and somebody else. Like we've done events, we would do product launches for a big international supermarket where we're pumping out 50,000 units per day of sample sizes. And we have to give them figures at the end of the day of how many units of how many products we're doing. So we would sample out 20 products over a period of 10 hours and we would then feed them back this amount of units of that product and this product and that product. And we have to get our costs on our packaging, on our products and on our hours for our staff, because if we over staff it, we're not going to make any money. And we're 23 years. So we have to make money to, as you know, to see
keep,
next year
keep
and the
going,
year after.
Yeah. These are the hidden kind of sides of business that you do not think about.
Yeah.
Back down to literally the pennies and the halfpences, just trying to, you know, squeeze extra bits here, there and every which way. Yeah.
And that's exactly it. Because when we went kind of on the trialing of the prep sheets in the last 2 weeks, one of our cookies that we make, when we tweaked a part of it, we were able to cut the cost by 5 cents. Now, 5 cents doesn't sound like a lot, but it's huge in our terms.
Times 10,000 or 100,000.
Yeah. So it's really important. You can just literally see how that's going
to
affect.
So you are here to talk really about Prep Sheet because this is your new baby.
Yeah, new baby.
Because we can skip over some of the, you know, everybody's had ups and downs in the catering. And you are shut down at the moment in terms of the cafes.
No, cafes are open. I have four cafes open. Catering is closed.
Catering, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, prep sheets.
So,
what is the prep sheet?
Yeah, so it's probably come full circle when I think, because when I started working for Tony all those years ago, it was on software and stuff, and he's now RFD. So he went out on his own again recently and came back on board kind of on the other side. So this has been a system that's evolved with us since 2007. And originally it was created by me to help me manage Brian better and the cost better. But as we grew and evolved, it couldn't manage going out on the cloud. It was done internally, but it was done with all basically links back to lots of sheets. And we needed a way that it could be more live with the pricing that we're getting, and we're very strong on the pricing with our suppliers. So we were very fortunate. Our son is into technology and has won awards.
Come on, be proud of him.
Yeah, no, super proud. He's won ICEF. He's won in The Young Scientist. He's created BatPi.
He is also a mathematician, and he's currently in MIT.
Well, starting in August. So he took a year out.
Congratulations him.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
that's huge.
That is huge. Yeah. And it's everything he ever dreamed of. So we're so
excited.
Him.
He got himself there.
He got himself there.
Good. No,
he got himself there because my uncle started giving him MIT review when he was in second year. My uncle went there.
I didn't ever go to MIT.
Yeah.
I never heard of the MIT review.
I know. So he's been focused. So he took a year out and we kind of had a chat with him. He got himself a job. He went out looking for some project work and he got himself a job with an Irish startup called To Desktop. But we had been bugging him and saying, we need you because we need this done. And I had gone to DCU to get this done. I'd gone to my IT guy to get this done. So it wasn't just something that, it's my son. It was something that we've been trying to get done externally for about 5 years now. So he has written it. We're treating it a bit like a restaurant. So we're on a soft opening right now. But it's a really simple, and every tool that I've brought into our company, because we have a lot of software tools, has to be easy. Because we're not tech savvy. The people that work with us are very busy. They're focused on delivering the product. So the tool has to be something that's like really simple.
So what does it do?
So you basically import your ingredients, and we're actually working on it now that we will have, if you use one of the main suppliers that we would use, we'll give you the ingredients.
So talk me through a cookie. You're making a cookie. So how does it work? You say 2 ounces of flour and 4 ounces of butter and whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So you put in this cookie that you're creating and you tell me that I get 18 cookies out of this. And then we will tell you the exact cost per cookie, how many calories per cookie, and the allergens. Because allergens...
That's all you have to do anyway, don't you, nowadays?
Exactly. Yeah. For compliance, you don't have to do calories yet, but we want to be there. I kind of took it to that level before Richard took over. So we want to continue with that. So it's an option. And our idea is that we would have a hidden menu because not everybody wants to know the calories. So you could turn around and say, can I have a calorie menu? But you don't have to have a calorie menu. Because I don't know if you've ever been to the Cheesecake Factory in America.
I have.
Okay, have you seen the calories?
Oh, I presume it's about 2,000 per serving. Yeah,
so you'd never order a cheesecake. Well, I would never order a cheesecake ever, because I know. But I would have ordered a cheesecake had they not told me in advance that there was 2,000 calories in that. So this will basically do it and do it simply. And you can put a photograph of your product as well. So again, it's really important for consistency that when you, especially for us, like we run 4 cafes at the moment, we want that if you get a cafe, if you get a cookie in St. Enda's, it'll taste the same as the cookie you get out in Donabate. So, and this is across all platforms. So you go on.
This is, I mean, it sounds great. Mm-hmm. But I'm not hearing that it's internationally applicable, is it?
So it would be.
But if I'm buying my ingredients from different people, say in France or Germany.
You import. So it's called an APL. So it's your approved product list. So you can import your APL from anywhere. And that's the point. So we have an import tool. But what we're working with a few Dublin chefs and we're asking them to test it and give us feedback. So it's like a soft opening. And then we're going to evolve it as they come back to us, because we know it works for us. And we know that since 2007, we've used this and we've managed to stay in business and grow. So we know it works. But we're
nothing like it at the moment elsewhere?
So there are bigger things like it at the moment, but they're very expensive to get into. So my job in our company is to look at technology because I love technology and I bring it in on a regular basis. And I have been looking for a long time and there is nothing that is as quick to enter and as affordable as this, because it's free at the moment, so you won't get cheaper. But the whole point of this is that if you have a little cafe down in Kerry, or you have 17 cafes, or you have a huge catering company and you're servicing, you know, events with 5,000 people, it works. And it's the recipes are scalable, because that's what we've been doing for the last, since 2007 with Prep Sheets.
So let's say 14 years.
Yeah, give or take. I don't know.
You say it's free at the moment. So what would you like from Team GBS, the listeners, our backers here?
Yeah. So we would love people in industry to try it for us and give us feedback.
And that you want them actually to actively take it and take it for free and say, this is terrible or this really works.
Absolutely.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Or you can ring. We'll give you support. We'll talk you through it. So again, Brian has made himself available. So because he's the main user and he will talk you through using it and, you know, how he's finding it for himself.
And you say it's from one teeny little cafe to as big as you want to
go. Yeah, look, the thing about it is it controls, it's a central hub for your recipes. So you can dissipate your recipes out to all your different sites. So we're, because some of our products will be made on site in the cafes and some of the products are made in HQ where we have the central kitchen. So we can have our staff, depending on where they are, they can access the recipes. It also controls them back to the approved product list where you have control. So they can only order what's on our approved product list. So if they have a new recipe, they have to go through head office.
So are you now a catering company or a software company?
So we're probably both. I suppose this tool helps us do our business. And it's really important for our business that this tool works, but it will also help other people. So we're a bit of both.
You know, the value on the business will be about 100 times more if you call yourself a software business.
Really?
Absolutely.
Too much like hard work in a catering company.
Right, to me, final question that we ask everybody nowadays is, who would you hire for the team, whether it be software or making the cookies?
Yeah.
Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this. So obviously there's big people, there's loads of people because I've met, thank God. And I could go with even Chanel McCoy or Ryan Reynolds. But I think for me, and the person who I would hire in a heartbeat, and you're going to laugh at this, is Paula Fitzsimons. And I'll tell you why.
I love hearing this.
Yeah.
This is week 6 of Paula Fitzsimons being given a shout out, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I actually have her ready to be shouted out for, believe
it
or not.
I think you need to do
that. That's fantastic. I didn't know you were going to say that.
Yes. And I suppose she is somebody who champions Irish entrepreneurs, obviously female, but she's phenomenal.
She's going for growth. She's Acorn. She's back for business. She's
Simon's Consulting.
Yep.
She is, and she's one powerhouse of a woman. She keeps you positive. She gives you confidence and absolutely in a heartbeat, Paula Fitzsimons.
That's a nice call. So that is Tara Beattie of The Caterers, of SI Cafe, of Prep Sheet, and I'd say lots of other things in the future. Tara, thanks so much for joining us.
Conobio. Or That Great Business Show.
We are the world's only gender-balanced business show, That Great Business Show, and we do want to hear from you, so do contact us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, or by plain old email, producer@thatgreatbusinessshow.com will get us. If you've got a great business you want the world to know about, you've now got That Great Business Show podcast to do just that. Many people ask me where we find the incredible companies that we feature on That Great Business Show every week. Well, our next guest came directly from a recommendation from another guest, Bob Hamilton of IrishEarns.com, whose story and business you can learn about on episode 21. Bob told me about Giles Newsom of iConnect 101, as both of them had worked together in the Bank of Ireland once upon a time. iConnect 101 is a very, very fast-growing company with operations in Ireland, India and the UAE. iConnect 101 has worked with banks, beer companies, airports, as well as many, many startups, making Giles a recognised source of wisdom about where our digital world is heading, which I think is a great place to start. Welcome to That Great Business Show, Giles Newsom.
Thank you very much, Conal. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you. And the world in the future, everybody wants to know, including me, where's it all going to go? Did you predict COVID as a matter of interest?
I wish I'd had that crystal ball. unfortunately not. But I think the world, as we know it, clearly has changed beyond recognition in the last 14 months or so since COVID first appeared. And it has accelerated so many changes, so many digital changes for so many companies at so many levels. McKinsey's recently published a report that stated that the growth of change around digital and that cliche digital transformation has probably been accelerated by somewhere between 7 and 10 years for many, many businesses.
Which is good news for iConnect 101, because that's exactly what you do.
It is. We find ourselves in a good place at a good time.
So you must have predicted COVID. You must have.
Maybe I did somewhere in the background. Actually, as it happens, I was traveling to our team in India at the very end of January and passing through Dubai on a very
last
late
year,
last year, 2020, yes, indeed. And passing through Dubai late on a Sunday night through the airport, looking at most of the airport wearing masks, I began to think there's a little problem here. Little did I know how close to Europe it had got at that point, and clearly it changed beyond belief in the days that followed.
And luckily you didn't bring it home.
No, thankfully I stayed very safe, quickly bought a mask and stayed very safe, and we're all now well used to it.
So I have brought you down the rabbit hole of COVID there, which I shouldn't, but so go back to the acceleration between 7 and 10 years. So we're now where we could have been in 2030 odd.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So what's going to happen in the next 6 months to a year? Another 5 years acceleration or 10 years acceleration?
I think the acceleration will continue. I think at one level, we're probably all a little bit tired of human-to-computer interaction on Zoom and Teams and BlueJeans and so on. We're going to have to live with it for a lot of the rest of this year, most of us. But I think the acceleration of a number of things will continue to grow at pace. So, for example, artificial intelligence, which a lot of people are a little bit afraid of, and something not to be afraid of. There are a lot of views that artificial intelligence will continue to grow exponentially over the next number of years. The use of robotics and intelligent automation to help companies to make decisions, to take away tasks which are repetitive administration tasks and allow people to do things that add more value to themselves, add more value to their businesses and so on.
That's specifically gonna... what would excite you as a former banker? I know you get very excited by lots of things.
I do.
What would it really excite you about what's going to come out of robotics, out of AI, rather than just say replacing jobs? But have you had a big thought? I often ask people, you know, whether you're in the shower or the bath, something you're thinking, and you say, God, that's what's going to happen.
I think there are a few things. I think from a customer point of view, and at the end of the day, the customer is the most important person in anything any organization ever does. I think the use of intelligence to give personalized a service to customers is going to be something very revolutionary as it continues to grow. So whether that's as a customer talking through an intelligent chatbot to find out some information, or whether it's a website that you're on learning all about you and giving you that kind of personalized service back or personalized journey back in banking, that could be incredible. So, you know,
will be, can be, or is, because I know that you are, I mean, quite literally, you are at the very forefront of this.
Yes.
And you are working with banks at the moment.
Yes.
So what is the most, you don't have to name the bank if you don't want to, I wouldn't mind hearing it though,
yeah,
is what is the most advanced bank in digital bank doing at the moment that we should go, whoa?
Well, so we've had a very interesting set of experiences over the last 15 months or so. We've had the great pleasure of working with a brand new digital bank on the other side of the world in Vietnam, a bank called TNEX, which is connected to a bank in Hanoi called MSB Bank. They have built a brand new bank. We have built a considerable part of their technology for them alongside a company called Mambu. And we have built technology to connect small and medium-sized enterprise customers with other customers. We've essentially built a marketplace, a digital marketplace. So if you think, if you can imagine Hanoi in Vietnam, and you can imagine anything from street traders to larger SMEs or larger enterprises wanting to have a website to allow their customers to place orders, wanting to have a digital presence and to create this kind of ecosystem of value between enterprises and end customers, we have actually built all of that. And the other thing that we've done, there's a couple of other key things that we've done. One of the most important things we've done is we've built something which sounds very technical, but it's called a customer data platform. And that very smart piece of technology enables us and enables the bank particularly to provide real-time personalized experiences to its end customers. Now, that's a radical change. That's a huge departure from banks thinking of customers, servicing them around products and, you know, almost a one-size-fits-all approach. Now, not quite, but almost. Historically, that has been the case. And as much as I loved my time working in financial services here in Ireland and had many, many interesting parts to a career, it's been fantastic to work with fintechs and digital startups and now a brand new digital bank.
Okay,
in that space.
I have so many questions, but let's start with the brand new bank. From start till now, how long has that taken?
In terms of technology build, less than a year.
And I mean, we are talking about HQ'd in Ireland.
We've got a number of people in UAE and in Abu Dhabi and Dubai, and we've got a software engineering delivery center and team based out of Cochin City in Kerala in India. So great time to be doing all of this in the middle of a pandemic, of course. But
and going back to your Bank of Ireland, you will have read in the newspapers over the last week or so that a lot of stick being given to Francesca McDonagh and others about shutting down branches.
Branches, yes.
In this day and age, do you kind of look at the people who say those things and say, what are you talking about? Get real, grow up and move on.
Very good question, Conal. The sort of emotional connection I have to the Bank of Ireland branch network, when I saw one of the branches I first worked in is going to close, I must admit I felt a bit sad. But that said, we live in a world where frictionless digital ability to self-serve has got much more sort of engrossed in capability within banking, mobile apps and so on. And I think in a lot of those branches cases, cash service wasn't there anymore. There wasn't a lot of customer service anymore. There were just self-service machines. So it's essentially moving from kind of one medium to another. And I think with the post office taking up some of the slack in terms of the sort of customer service part of it, hopefully it won't mean a significant impact to customers. It's, I suppose, historically, because those branches have been there in some cases for literally hundreds of years, there's a lot of history there. But
as they say about the curate's egg, some good, some bad.
Exactly.
So if you can set up a bank, or not set up, but you can do the technology for the bank in a year odd, like, forget about 250 years of Bank of Ireland or however long they've been on planet Earth. Like, they can be, could be, and I'm not kind of zeroing in on Bank of Ireland, but a bank, an existing so-called pillar bank, could be replaced, the pillar could be replaced in a year.
Well, I think the capability from a technology point of view is there. I think there's a lot of psychological contract stuff, though, in the background. So, you know, consumers are typically very loyal to a pillar bank for a number of reasons, because historically they would have had a mortgage or, you know, a large loan or savings or whatever that tied them from a loyalty point of view. And a fair bit of that is still in existence. But having said that, if you look even domestically here in Ireland at the growth of Revolut and N26 and the frictionless way those banks allow you to make instant payments in real time, or, you know, to buy Bitcoin or whatever it happens to be, that's changing the landscape so quickly. And the sort of the Generation Y, the Generation Z who want that instant gratification won't wait.
Gratification is one word. They want instant payment, because I do cite on this podcast frequently that I'm with Ulster Bank on the business side, and to send my pence to my daughter in New York, it takes 5 working days.
I know.
And she's on Revolut and she wants it in 5 seconds.
I know.
Now, Dad, please.
Yes. It
doesn't make any sense to her.
It doesn't. It shouldn't take as long as it does to transfer money from one part of the world to the other, or from one bank to another. I know in Ireland there is a move afoot with Cinch Payments to ultimately look at a real-time payment exchange between the banks, which is a good start. In Europe, there are other accelerators to do this, but it still takes far too long. And Revolut have at least shown that it can be done in real time. And I think as part of our digital journey and the acceleration of it in the coming years, payments are a hygiene factor, and the ability to do all of that instantly is key.
If you have shown the capability of setting up a bank in within that year-odd, as I use the term, there must be other people coming knocking on your door saying, Giles, let's have a chat. Big growth plans?
Yes, we have. We've, as well as operating in financial services, we have worked in other verticals and continue to do so. Our marketplace capability we have used in the beer industry in the US from an e-commerce point of view.
With Molson Coors, isn't
yes,
that right?
Amongst some others, yes, we
That's
have.
That's a big name.
It has. It's been a really interesting journey. And particularly during COVID, when we witnessed significant growth in terms of...
I have to ask, how are you finding them, as in, how did they find you, or did you find them? Molson Coors is a world brand.
Yeah.
Giles Newsom is not.
No, through a partner in the US, we did some work directly and indirectly for them, and it kind of grew a very strong relationship. So it's been a fantastic journey with them in the US, and we're pretty proud of it. But I think also in UAE and further afield in the work that we're doing in Vietnam, we plan to very much grow in Southeast Asia our marketplace and ecosystem capability. We can see real opportunities to grow it in that market. Also in UAE, there's a huge amount happening in terms of banking transformation, and it's we 2 years ago we set up a business there to be able to authentically work in that marketplace. It was really important to have a physical presence there, so we did that. Our chief technology officer Sajid is based there, and a number of our team are there as well. So we see some significant opportunities there, and I think closer to home in Northwest Europe, we see some opportunities both in the consultative space and also in the product side of things as well. So lots going on.
You were very specific there about Northwest Europe. Mm. You obviously have plans, or maybe there are contracts in the pipeline.
We're in various discussions at the moment here in Ireland, indeed in the UK as well, and hoping to grow a number of opportunities in this region soon enough. Restrictions of movement haven't been a huge challenge to us, although I will say having gone from 100 flights a year to a commute across my back garden is something of an adjustment.
A positive one?
Mixed views about it. I mean, yes, in a lot of ways, from a not having to be in an airport in a security line at 4 a.m, don't miss that. Human to human interaction, I miss hugely though, and I think a lot of us do. It's something that we all hope will return one day.
It sounds like you're going to go for huge growth. Are you fully funded?
We are. Well, we've actually sort of bootstrap funded our business ourselves to date, and I think in the years to come, as we grow, we look at various options. But for the moment, we're pretty proud of the fact that we've built this business from scratch authentically. We're not quite 4 years old yet, so
it is fantastic.
A lot has gone on.
You really have done incredibly well.
Well, thank you.
And that's hard work. I mean, I'm not saying it came easy or it's dropped out of the sky or anything.
No, I think there's been an element of luck about it. There's been an element of timing about it.
And thank you, COVID. Hard graft.
Yes, thank you, COVID, indeed. An element of hard graft about it as well. And, you know, we've had some interesting things along the way. Most recently, our team in India entered an innovation challenge sponsored by the Indian government probably about a year ago. The Indian government looking for an alternative to Zoom and Teams for video conferencing. And as it happens, we had some experience in that space. 2,000 companies entered a challenge and we actually won. So we've now built a video conferencing product of our own.
Let's just go through this. This company, HQ'd in Foxrock, Dublin, won this massive.
Well, ostensibly led by the team in India, but yes.
I appreciate that, yes, but yes. Your HQ is in Foxrock, Dublin.
I know, it's a bit mad. But
and you won a world contract it was open to the world contract from the Indian government.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
And the team in India are absolutely thrilled and delighted.
And well done then.
It's been fantastic, and so they're now working very very closely with the Indian government on a lot of opportunities.
Do we talk value?
Not yet.
Very big.
Well, we've reinvested quite a bit of it back into the product, but
India is a very big place.
Yes, I think the opportunities are going to be very interesting in India,
fantastic.
And I think the opportunities to either not that we ever want to compete with Zoom, because realistically we can't, but we do know that there are opportunities to look at this around the world.
Zoom come out of Cisco's WebEx at one stage, so why not compete with Zoom?
Well, indeed. I think we probably the most powerful part of this application is that you can store your own data in your environment rather than them holding your data.
And the Zoom figures recently showed a 370% growth.
That's right. Yes.
Bad, eh? Just come here to me before we let you go. Two questions. One is, what can Team GBS do for you? Can we, our podcast listeners, do anything for you?
Absolutely. So we are true digiholics. We are experts in e-commerce. We've considerable experience in that space. We're experts in digital transformation related consulting as well. And love to talk to anybody who's got any challenges in that space, any interest in talking to me about digital transformation or e-commerce for that matter, be it in financial services, fintech or otherwise. I have a long history of mentoring fintech companies and happy to talk to anybody about anything digital that moves, to be quite honest.
And the final question is, who would you hire in a heartbeat? Now, it sounds like you probably have already got the perfect team. But you possibly, if you were to add one more or even a handful more, who would you go for?
Really good question. I've two answers to it. If I didn't have Sajith, our CTO, our Chief Technology Officer, he's the person I would hire in a heartbeat, because without him, I don't know where I'd be.
I can't really answer because he's already on your team.
He's already there, I know, but it's a pat on the back to him because he's an absolute rock star. But if not for that, then I think I'd have to say one of the two Collison brothers, the Stripe guys. And the reason why is...
Because they're very wealthy.
Ultimately, yes, it has a bit to do with it. But they saw an absolute gap in the market in the payment space.
Yeah.
They saw the friction. And they gung-ho went for it and said, we need to get rid of this and we need to make this a frictionless end-to-end solution. And by God, have they done it.
And they're still doing it.
And they're still doing
it. And they're still adding. Mm. And the
30 plus billion in value.
Yeah, 100 billion. Yeah.
It's incredible. It's an extraordinary success story. I would love their drive, their passion.
You don't and seem a bit too, of their luck.
You don't seem too shy on the commitment, passion and ability, do you?
Well, I suppose not, no.
There you go. Listen, Giles Newsome, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. And again, a big shout out to Bob Hamilton for introducing us.
You're listening to That Great Business Show.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
That Great Business Show is sponsored by De Facto, the world's best all-natural shaving oil. Rub just a few drops of oil onto wet skin, and that's it. You'll get a super soft, nick-free shave with no shaving burn, simple as, and no harsh chemicals drying out your skin, and no pressurized foam cans polluting the planet. For men and women, De Facto is the best anyone can get. Buy it now online at defactoshave.com.
That Great Business Show.
Now, as we all know, way too many businesses claim they're award-winning. But if your business won Accountant of the Year 2020, Tax Team of the Year 2020, Practice of the Year 2019, Medium-Sized Practice of the Year 2019 at the Irish Accountancy Awards, plus shortlisted CEO of the Year 2018, Image Magazine Businesswoman of the Year, shortlisted Female Entrepreneur of the Year 2017, Matheson WMB Awards, and I'm only reading not even half of the awards that tax advisory company Fenero.ie has won. Well, you'd have to agree they are award winning. Fenero.ie specializes in tax accounting and payment management solutions for Ireland's fast-growing contingent workforce. They are contractors, freelancers, gig workers, and the businesses and recruitment agencies who engage them. Fenero's award-winning, and really is award-winning, founder, Sinead Doherty, joins Team GBS, That Great Business Show, now to talk awards, maybe, and so-called gig working. Sinead, you are so award-winningly welcome.
Thank you, Conor. I'm delighted to be here. I think I can go home now, to be honest, after that introduction.
I was on your website. And I mean, you wouldn't need a second web page just for the awards.
No, we're working on it, yep.
How come you're winning so many awards?
I like to believe we're doing great things. We're working really hard, fantastic team. And yeah, trying to do things differently.
But every one of your competitors wants to win both those awards, but also they say they're doing fantastic things too. You're obviously doing it in, as the Americans, I hate the word, they say the winningest way. Do you ever hear the Americans say you're the most winningest?
The winningest smile, I suppose, yeah. Winning smiles and things, yeah, we'll certainly try and bring that to it.
What are you doing differently?
I suppose there's two sides of what we do. We're absolute experts at what we do. We really do have that tax expertise and we really get the complexities of all of it. The complexities of it, I suppose, are our issue. It's our problem to deal with. And what our customers are really paying us to do is to make it simple for them to understand. So we're completely focused on customer experience. Possibly that's a phrase that a lot of accountancy firms wouldn't even particularly use, but that's our North Star, is unrivaled positive customer experience. So it's those two twin elements, really knowing what we're all about and making it simple and easy.
Because when I get onto your website, I am not talking to the accounting specialist, sure I'm not. I'm talking to nice, human, soft people.
Definitely. That's what we're all about. We're very approachable. Yeah. Because
you're doing it differently. You deliberately put this kind of, I won't say a barrier, it's the opposite of a barrier. It is, you are welcoming people in, you have a chat with people, and then the back end is where the accountancy work happens. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I say, our focus is on about people and how our customers experience what we do. And we're completely focused on trying to make it simple, easy to understand, approachable. Accountancy and tax can have that, you know, fear factor. Oh, I just don't know what it's all about. And look, we're trying to take that all away. And yeah, very approachable. Every single person, every member of the team has great people skills. We hire, I suppose, everyone onto the team that you're great with, love working with people as much as you do love working with the numbers.
How do you gauge that or assess that?
How do you assess that? That's a good question.
I presume you do most of the hiring, do you?
Or maybe... Yeah, I still do all of the hiring. Yeah. It's so important, just building the team, getting the right people in.
What do you smell off them or see in their eyes or...
I suppose for me, I'm looking for people who are open, who are kind of conversationalists, who just can build rapport really quickly, because that's what you want them to do. So if they can come in and chat to you, that you feel you can have a good conversation, a good chat with them, then, you know, that's ticking a lot of boxes straight away.
And it's been a successful formula. Leave aside your awards, because they are huge, but you have grown and grown.
We have.
And grown, and you're continuing to grow.
Yeah, so we are 40 now on the team and continuing to recruit at the moment. So
you want people, go on, shout it out.
Yeah, big shout out.
Who do you want or what do you want?
So we have a few roles. We have one on our sales team. We have, we're looking for a qualified accountant. We're looking for actually a new manager in one of our teams as well. So across the spectrum, and be continuing to hopefully add new roles this year as things continue to grow. So
working remotely, or do they have to be in your HQ, and where is the HQ? And
so we are based in Blanchardstown, but the team are all working remotely from home at the moment, and that's actually a model we're going to continue. So we are looking to permanently move into a hybrid work place going forward and maintain the benefits of remote working. It's a big transition. It's not something you can do overnight and to maintain successfully. And we're very much about our culture and our sense of one team. So it's about, you know, trying to make sure we can sustain all of that as we continue to make these transitions.
The boss at Goldman Sachs, now, I know you're not quite Goldman Sachs yet, but he says that post-pandemic, they're all going to get into their suits and go back to work in the office.
Mm.
Discuss.
Look, every business is different and you have to decide what suits you. And I think there's so many great benefits of remote working, both for businesses and for the employees. But there's a lot of challenges as well. And I think if you rush very quickly into it, you can potentially get it wrong as well. For us, we want to try and provide those benefits for our team. We're very focused on what we're like as a place to work and offering the best of, you know, the best that we can for our team. But
I'm just looking down at my notes here, because I do remember from the website, you have won Best Place to Work a few times, or is that right? Or
no, but we have won awards for our workplace wellbeing programs. That might be what you're thinking of, yeah.
I think you also do have a Good Place to Work or a Great Place to Work or something, whether you were shortlisted or something. I just remember seeing it anyway.
Yeah, we're very well known for our wellbeing programs and our culture of wellbeing. So that there's...
Because this is something very close to your heart.
Yes, yeah.
You are focused yourself. You are a big badminton person.
I was, Connell. So yeah, I loved badminton. I played badminton at university and in my 20s. And I was a director of finance for the Badminton Association of Ireland as well for a while. I stopped when I started having babies, which is no real excuse, but just... I suppose the juggle of growing a business and raising a family, and you know, things have to go. And quite often, it's those things that we enjoy ourselves, unfortunately, do slip by the wayside. But luckily, I love what I do as well.
Mental health is huge with you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important. Mental health is so important. We've always been really focused on that. Have a real open culture around mental health in the business. And
how do you tackle that? What do you do actively?
I think it's how you model it, to be honest, Connell. And that's what we've always done. I should mention my husband, so he doesn't feel like he's been overlooked in all of this as well. He's my business partner. But
does he work with you?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. So the two of us, I suppose, have always really modelled that. We just have an open culture. We're here to support. That's the philosophy that we've always had since day one of the business.
If you were giving another business a tip or tips in trying to look after that area, what would the big takeaway be? What would you say? You've got to do this.
There's loads of initiatives you can do, and I think a lot of businesses can fall into that. I call it, it can be a bit of a trap that you're running kind of initiatives, they're important that, you know, we have the, you know, talks where we have a great relationship with a mental health nurse that comes in and does health checks with us, comes in and gives regular talks on different health topics.
What would he or she do in terms of when that person, the mental health nurse, comes in? What is actually do they do?
So the physical health checks that he does as well. So that would be checking your BMI and various kind of basic health indicators, but things that you might just never get around to do. If you have to go to the GP yourself, you wouldn't take the time to do it. So,
and how often would you do that?
That was annually. We have missed it this year purely because of COVID. It's high. We can't deliver that in the homes at the moment, but we've delivered other things online, such as managing stress, anxiety, especially in kind of the uncertainties that COVID have brought. So there's plenty of things around that, but I do think the underlying importance is actually just the culture, because you can have as many talks or things like that, but if you have a culture that's stressful, if you have a bad manager, if you have a stressful workload, I mean, your lunchtime yoga session is going to be fairly quickly undone. So it really is about it's that holistic approach and the openness to know you can talk about it. If you're struggling, you can go to your manager, you can come to us, you can come to. So we've always just had that approach.
And I mentioned that the company does specialise a good deal in contract workers and working. Mm. You've got strong views about the gig economy.
Yeah, I suppose it's something I'd be very aware of because of the space that we're in. And there's a real, I suppose, challenge at the moment around independent contracting and self-employed and gig working. I think it's more within that wider context of protections and rights for the self-employed versus the employed. I think
we are gig workers exploited.
Certainly, some of them are. I think we have such a wide spectrum now of how people work. There's so many different ways of working, how we work, when we work, where we work. And we just don't fit as neatly into those categories of the self-employed and the employed as we used to. So within that spectrum, there's kind of more grey areas. And certainly there are people, especially within that kind of lower paid, more vulnerable working space, that there does need to be more rights and protections for them. And there is a lot of awareness, I think, to that. You know, we hear, people would have heard a lot about maybe Uber and Deliveroo tend to be the names that people would associate. But within that whole spectrum, there is a significant majority of people in that gig kind of so-called gig economy space are actually these highly skilled professionals. And
I can understand now, because I was actually going to ask you that question. Uber or Deliveroo drivers are very unlikely to be using your services, but very highly trained tech workers presumably are.
Yes. So our clients would be mainly tech, finance, banking, pharma, engineers, that side of things, sure.
And what are the big challenges there? I'm thinking now they could be working half of their week for an Irish company, or a quarter of their work for an American company, and a quarter. Actually, I was on to somebody yesterday who told me exactly that he's got his own startup, but also works for an American company. So he had to skip from one call to the other to go on to American time.
Sure. And that's just so common these days. And that's what we're saying about the wide spectrum of self-employed versus employed. There's so many different ways of working. There's so much different lingo around it all. Is it a side hustle? Is it your gig? Are you a project worker? There's so much different, even massive language around it all as well.
And did Fenero find itself into that space, or did you zero in on it yourself?
Zeroed in on it because I suppose I've always had a real interest in different ways of working. I think probably because I've always quite driven to be self-employed myself, and just was curious about the different ways that and options open to us all, and how we can choose to work in different ways to fulfill what we want from our own lives. So in terms of Fenero, I suppose became aware of the need in this space for a service that could really help people, but in a simple and straightforward way. And that's where I suppose I decided we dived in with Fenero on that.
And you mentioned something dear to my heart. You said you always wanted to work for yourself. Why?
I don't know. Do people know why? You were just, I suppose.
Because we're all mad.
Yeah.
It is a madness. It's a disease, we are called
isn't
the misfits.
It? Yeah. It's just driven that way. I think I always had a sense of wanting to be in, I think it's funny now to look back, but that sense of being in control of my own destiny somehow. And obviously you can completely do that. You don't have to be self-employed to do that, but that
and
was how I associated
it. The funny thing about
that
is you think that you're in charge, even though you've got
exactly
kids
it.
And a husband and a business and
it's an absolute smokescreen to think that, oh, I'm in charge of my own destiny now. Great. It's like, no, that's not it at all. When you actually think you're in control when you have your own business is, there's
can you bring the business international? Because, of course, the Irish tax code is going to be different to the UK tax code. We should explain the accent that you have came out of. Did it come out of Reading or came out of somewhere in the south of England, did it?
That's right, yeah. Well, my name probably better reflects my nationality than my accent, for sure. So I was born over here. I was born in Dublin, and my parents moved to England when I was 5. So I ended up growing up in Essex.
You're an Essex girl.
Yeah, an Essex girl. Always retained massive links to Ireland, though all my family were here, and we'd spend 3 weeks every summer in Tipperary on my uncle's farm. So,
oh, happy days, yep, happy days, yeah.
Bringing in the cows from the field and all of that stuff.
So my question, I did interrupt you there, I'm sorry, but I was asking about growing internationally. Can you do that, or can you reverse the guys who are Irish or Ireland-based who go to the States, for example, and need to pay taxes here? Are you seeing any of that work?
So what we have seen a massive amount of in the last couple of years was actually people coming from the UK is probably the best example. That's stopped now with COVID. But we were seeing a huge influx of people coming from the UK because of the changes happening there, obviously, with Brexit and other tax-related issues, IR35, without getting into too much of the jargon here.
The old
that joy, if you know anything about it. So lots of UK contracts coming here, and we would support them. But yeah, we are very focused on the Irish market, and there's plenty more growth potential in there, and we're very keen to expand further into that. But absolutely, I think COVID is really accelerating that all the thinking around global mobility even further. It's always been something that everyone's aware of, talking of that greater mobility of talent across the world. But that's exactly what COVID has brought right to our doorsteps, so that people can work. People could always work from different locations, but it's just companies and businesses were all much more open to it now because we've just accepted the normality of it has been accelerated.
Except Goldman Sachs.
Except Goldman Sachs. Well, yeah.
I think.
Okay, we're not all more open to it, but a significant majority of us more are.
What can Team GBS, our great listening audience, do for you?
If you know anyone that's interested in contracting, you have to send them our way. But we're certainly here. It's more, what can we do for you? To be honest, that's our philosophy. How can we help?
I call it Fenero. You call it Fenero. Where does the name come from?
Did I say Fenero? That's funny.
I think you did. I thought I heard you saying that. Yeah.
Well, it was Fenero in the olden days as such, more my accent, but actually people couldn't really, it didn't click. So everyone called it Fenero. So in the end, I had to adapt and we went with Fenero in the end. No, it isn't. It's the other way around. You'll have to cut that bit out.
We don't cut anything on The Great Business Show.
Sorry, it's Fenero. I'm having a relapse.
What does Fenero, what does it stand for? Or where did it come from?
It comes from a Latin word meaning to do well in business. So,
does it?
Yeah.
Nice so, one.
Yeah.
Like that.
Where that came from. I didn't want to have a name that was too traditional accountancy because that's what we were never about, being a traditional accountant. So didn't want to be Doherty & Co, for example.
Final question. Hire in a heartbeat. Who would you go for?
Hire in a heartbeat. So obviously this is, I suppose, fictional, Connell, and you're giving me that permission to be fictional. But in a heartbeat, I would love to hire Sarah Blakely if she'd be interested.
Remind me.
Founder of Spanx.
Oh, yeah, yes. So, the underwear woman.
That's right.
And she did sell out eventually, I think, didn't she? For a large amount of money, I think she did, yeah. She might be available, you know.
She might be, fingers crossed. No, I believe she's still there. But self-made billionaire, I think. But obviously incredibly smart woman, very innovative thinking. But also the other side of it, she's just having fun kind of along the way. And I think probably that's a big part of it. I think we'd have great crack if she was there. But very much, I suppose that's Fenero is a company where, you know, it's a serious business what we're doing. We're handling people's taxes and their monies. But we're also all about having, you know, the banter and the crack as well. So, and trying to think differently and do things differently. So I think, Sarah, you'd fit right in if you're listening.
We will pass it on to her. And final question. Anybody who would like to work with your team, who would like to be considered, where will they find you?
Yeah, so you can find us at www.fenero.ie and then there's a careers page there.
Fenero.
That's right.
You can call it whatever you want.
Sure.
Fenero, .ie, aren't you?
That's dot.ie.
Okay, that is Sinead Doherty. She'd be the co-founder, which one are you? I think you're founder.
Founder.
You're the boss. You be the boss. Oh, yeah. Good. of Fenero.ie. And thank you very much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Subscribe today to That Great Business Show on your favourite podcast platform, including Apple and Spotify.
That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast, is made possible through the support of That Great Irish Shaving Oil Company, De Facto, made in Mayo, sold around the world. They're on a mission to become the number one shaving oil brand in the world. Help them achieve that ambition by buying it today on defactoshave.com.
Canobio. That Great Business Show.
Now, when I read the headline on the happyteams.io website that said, employees don't quit jobs, they quit bosses. Well, I had to find out more. This very early stage Irish company has built what they say is the next generation of employee engagement software to provide team members with the voice they often don't have, and to turn what they say into the insight that leaders need to build happy teams. The founder of Happy Teams is Michael Deaver, who has a PhD in program transformation from Dublin City University. So where else could I start? By first welcoming Michael Deaver to That Great Business Show and then asking, what is a doctorate in program transformation?
A doctorate in program transformation is a long 4 or 5 years of work. basically what we did was we took, this is going to be quite technical.
Just give me the Conal O'Moran version.
Okay.
Very basic.
Okay, so basically when a program runs on your computer, it runs as a process. and you can think of it.
Really?
In olden days, you could think of it sequentially. So it does one thing, followed by another thing, followed by another thing, followed by another thing. And that's the way developers like the program is do this, do that, do this, do that. But with modern computing, there's parallel processors. So that means you can take parts of your code and run them on two processors at the same time and get a speed up. But there's a big burden to a developer. In thinking about that, there's lots of pitfalls and things. There's an awful lot you need to think about. So what we did...
I knew that.
Oh, it's obvious.
Come here to me. Amy Connolly, you may not have heard her. She was on one of the earlier programs. She has a wonderful company called Sculpted by Amy.
Right.
And she got 580 points in her leaving.
Yeah.
How many points did Michael Deaver get in his leaving?
305.
I get away. I was hoping that you'd say...
Exactly enough to get into computing in DCU.
I was going to have a kind of a competition where we'd see who'd have the highest points on that great business show.
Yeah, I got exact... The points went down that year and I just scraped in by the neck of my teeth. Well, and it was the best thing in the world for me.
You are very, very honest. So come here to me. You were going to correct something that I said earlier on.
Yeah, it's Deaver.
Oh, Deaver. Sorry. Deaver. I keep on calling him by Deaver.
Yeah, and everyone does that.
And I tell you why. Because you won't know this, but President Reagan, remember him? Did you ever read about him?
I think it's a bit before my time. I've read about him, yeah.
His PR man was a fellow called Mike Deaver.
Oh, right, okay.
So maybe he's from, and I think he might have actually had Irish roots, so maybe you're related to him.
It's a common name over in the West. We have a lot of family down in Mayo, Achill Island specifically.
Okay. But they're Deavers.
Deaver.
Yeah. Okay, we'll stick with Michael Deaver.
Deaver is fine. Everyone has a different pronunciation.
Listen, before we spend another 20 minutes talking about family names and Mayo, that's where de facto comes from Castlebarn.
Yeah.
Let us talk about your happy company. I'd love to call it Happy Heads, but it's not. It's called Happy Teams.
Happy Teams. Happy what Heads,
does,
yeah, yeah.
What does Happy Teams do?
Happy Teams. We're in the business of happiness. So, trying to put a smile on people's face and work, but indirectly. So what we're focused on is giving employees an avenue to communicate anonymously and easily with their leaders. And really, the main focus is for the leader to put data in front of the leader where they can make an informed decision on if they see people are unhappy with X, Y, and Z, then they can adjust their expectations or implement new processes in the business to improve engagement, because no one wants to be unhappy in work.
Because as you say, you leave the bosses, not the work.
Exactly, right? Yeah, it's a top-down.
Now, tell the truth, because you've already shown that you do tell the truth.
Yeah.
Is, like, do people actually, you know, if I'm filling out forms, do I fill out forms for me or do I fill out forms to try to rectify a company?
Yeah, so that's a problem. Like, the classic model of engagement is a survey at the end of the year. It becomes a KPI. I know you don't like acronyms on the show, so key performance indicator.
Thank you. You've been listening.
I have been listening around how the engagement is, and then it's just did improve on last year, did improve on next year. The good companies will make some changes based on that, but most companies it's just kind of ticking a box, and then it's on to the next year. And that's frustrating for a leader who wants to make change, and also for the employee who's spent 20 minutes filling out a form, being honest, like I try to be, listen out their woes, and then there's no change year to year, and why would you stay?
So talk me through what Mary or John sitting in a company, mid-sized companies, large companies, or do you do all sorts of companies?
We can handle all sorts. Our target initially is going to be small to medium.
Okay.
But yeah, we can handle all sorts.
And so Mary or John, living in a small to medium-sized company, is taking out the forms, and what kind of questions are they being asked?
So we have a couple of organisational psychologists working with us. They're absolutely amazing at what they do. And they've come up with a curated set of questions. They're very simple. They're like, for example, one would be, do you feel your opinion is valued in the workplace? That's very important. That's a good indicator of whether your staff are happy or not, if they feel useful or not, or if they feel people are listening.
And if they feel that people are not listening, is that a cue that these people are going to go out and set up their own companies, the people we love?
not necessarily. Usually when people leave, it's a sum of things. There's always a straw that broke a camel's back, but usually it's a sum of parts. But as a leader, if you don't have that information, you can see people are unhappy. Like Mary's sitting at the chair there and you see she's just clocking in, clocking out and not really enjoying her job. You want to fix that. That's where Happy Teams comes in.
And so, you find out that she's unhappy and yeah. that maybe she feels that she's not being listened to. And does it kick somebody's ass to say, listen to Mary or...?
So it's anonymous. So that's really important.
So they don't know it's Mary.
They won't know it's Mary, but they will see very simple analytics showing that there is a problem in a specific area.
Okay.
And what we will do is we'll put that question in front of them and say 40% of people feel that they're not, their opinion isn't valued. That's really important information to have at all levels of a company. And we're going down the road of nudges. So,
I saw this nudges thing on your list of things, and I have no idea what I know what a nudge is, but not your kind of nudge.
That's basically what it is. It's just like a nudge with the elbow. So basically what we'll do is, so we integrate with like Slack, Microsoft Teams, Google Workspace, Microsoft Office 365, and that's how we ask our questions. So like on Slack, you'll get your simple question, you respond with an emoji. So you don't even need to think about it, you glance, click the button, you're done. That's your answer for the day.
For the day? How often do you ask these questions?
It's up to the company, every day or every 2 days, depending on their settings.
Well, I just imagined you were talking about once a year.
No. There is value in doing that yearly pulse, but daily is better because you get a metric of how people respond. Like, say you're on a client project, for example. That's a normal one in tech, and perhaps a client is being difficult. It's breaking you down. We can track that every day, and with like predictive analytics, which we're going to in the next few months, we can then say this team, this particular team or this particular project, your team members, they're not happy with X, Y, and Z. You can compare it to another team and see, oh, is it a manager? Is it a managerial problem or is it actually the client or is it just the project itself? And then that should encourage, I was listening to one of your podcasts last night with Tony Smurfit.
Oh, yeah.
Was saying communication. And that's what I say to everyone. Nearly every problem can be solved with communication, but not a lot of people communicate. And communicating problems in the workplace is something that people aren't always comfortable doing. Like if me and you were working together and say I was your boss and I said, how do you feel about this? There's always office politics and things like that.
Yeah.
And you're going to filter your answer.
Yeah.
And then maybe I'm grumpy. Yeah. And now you're going to filter your answer even more. Whereas if it's an anonymous question, you can just go, I hate this.
Yeah.
And so these nudges, we analyse all that data and then we'll be sending managers prompts going, hey, we noticed that your team on this project or on this client are unhappy with X, Y, or Z. Here's some thought leadership we've done. Like our organisation psychologists will write up approaches to solve these problems. Or here's, for example, a TED Talk. Or Simon Sinek is all the rage at the moment. So here's the Simon Sinek talk.
Never heard of a Simon Sinek.
He's like a leadership guru. He's very guru. He's very insightful. He's lots of little snippets.
Good. I must check him out.
Yeah, yeah.
You might even get him onto the podcast.
Maybe. Yeah. And I'd love to sit in the chair if you get him in.
You're very welcome. So does this cost? Obviously, it's a business. And like you know, you're in business yourself.
Yes.
Is another cost. You can't take it.
I know. So the way we're charging is it's $1.99 per user or per team member per month. Obviously at enterprise.
I'm glad you didn't say a cup of coffee because I hate that
it's
one.
It's half a cup of coffee per person per month, which we think is a very fair pricing. Obviously enterprise is different, but for small to medium companies, that's a very, very amenable price.
By enterprise being different, you mean that it's only a quarter of a cup of coffee or maybe an eighth of a cup of coffee?
I don't know if I go to an eighth of a cup of coffee. Depends on the enterprise. But essentially. And
there is take up on this.
Yeah. So basically, like you mentioned we're early, like we did our proper launch like at start February. So we have like 2,000 users, 200 companies.
Already?
Yeah.
When you say the start of February, 2021.
Yeah, 2021.
This is only the middle of March. Sorry, very early March.
Yeah,
what am I
talking
about?
33, 34 days.
That is fantastic.
It is. It's great. Yeah, yeah.
And how are you getting this traction?
It's all organic.
But Somebody has to say something to somebody.
So far, it's all organic. We've seen a lot of educators come on, which is a sector we knew we'd want to target someday, but we didn't know if it'd be right now because educators are, it's a high-pressure job. Like, if you're educating, like, 20 children, like, that's...
Okay.
You're essentially a childminder for 20 kids. That's a lot of pressure, and there's a lot of stress. My dad is a teacher, my stepmother is a teacher, and there's a lot of stresses and all that. So it's worth capturing that information as well. So we've a lot of educators.
Yeah, I'll stop you there because I can imagine, you know, a teacher to me, and many of my family are teachers, is that person, man, woman, is not sitting at a desk going to click, click, click. So when does your teacher click in with their happy faces or whatever?
So, like, to mention the C word, with COVID, lots of people.
We've talked about nothing else today.
With COVID, lots of teachers, my dad and stepmother are working from home.
Of course.
It's all Zoom, it's all Teams.
Let's imagine a COVID-free world.
COVID-free world. Okay, so all teachers have email addresses on your Microsoft or Google account associated with the school. So we can target through that. If the school uses Teams to communicate internally, we can target through that. So in the email format, you get your question, you see three emojis and you tap one of the emojis. That hits our server and we record your answer, and then whoever's in your leadership position in the school can review. And it all works the same way. So I know I mentioned Teams and clients there. That's how we initially thought about companies is, or organisations is, your people work on projects. So you could think of a classroom as a project or a team. Or your teachers are a team, or your science teachers are a team. But based on user feedback, we've actually, just this morning we did a huge rewrite of our analytics over the last 2 weeks to move to tags, because it's so much more flexible. So
you've lost me
so
now.
So like a hashtag, except that there's no hash sign or pound sign. So basically now you group things in terms of tags. So like, in the school setting, I don't want to stick to the school setting too much. But
everybody's been to school, so you understand.
So in a school setting, you might have a science department, a maths department. You might have SNAs. You might have leadership of the upper management of the school. You might have board management. All these people can be tagged with those attributes. Or you can have tags around classroom size or subjects that are taught or what cycles they teach. Like, do they teach just Leaving Cert? Do they teach Junior Cert? And within the school setting, now you can track across all of those and see how your teachers in all of those categories are engaged in their workplace. Now, there's a thought that eventually you could turn this out to students, perhaps, later on.
Given out about the teachers.
Well,
That's been done. Remember, that was early, very early social media. They were given out
about
rate
teacher.
Your teacher. That's the one.
Yeah. I don't think I ever clicked anything on that.
Neither did I.
But
I was a little bit before that.
But it's it'd all be anonymous, and I don't know, like, you wouldn't really turn it on for like younger kids, but maybe towards the end of their cycles, or to track stress levels in cycle years, like Junior Cert or Leaving Cert years. Maybe it's something worth looking at.
Schools are not enterprises, so therefore they haven't got the benefit of a profit coming in. So who's going to pay? Again, I'm sorry to stick with the school, but it is very interesting because everybody understands it. Who pays?
So really we're kind of talking about the unknown here because we haven't looked into it too much. But I was listening to a podcast recently, and there's this company in America, which I can't for the life of me remember the name.
That's all right.
But they deal with schools, and basically it would be the likes of... So in America, we have a few school districts on the platform already. And it's the school district that pays that company in America.
Okay.
So you deal with the school district or whoever
so
is...
the Department of Education will be paying for this eventually here.
Well, hopefully, yeah.
And of the people or the companies that have taken you on within, what did you say, 34 days?
Yeah, 34 days, yeah.
Who or what kind of company? You don't have to name them, but what kind of companies might they be?
So we have, I actually have a list on my phone of what
I know,
the
just
industries
rough,
are.
Kind of,
but
kind of,
yeah, rough. So like, obviously we've educators, we've talked about them. We have tech companies.
Yeah.
We have...
Anything unusual? Vets or zoos or I don't know why I'm thinking about animals at the moment.
Not quite like that. We have there's a homeless charity in America has signed up.
Now, how would you come across a homeless charity in America?
I don't know how we ended up on their platform.
That is fantastic. But, yeah, I'm always interested in how a company finds other companies.
So currently the way it would work is someone would go onto like the Teams or Slack app store and type employee engagement, and hopefully we come up at top of that list.
It's one thing I'm going to do for you is, and other people I have said it to as well, I belong to the Ireland Connecticut Business Council, and every Wednesday, anybody who's listening can do this, you can join us, the Ireland Connecticut Business Council, with you 30 minutes strict every Wednesday, and you can pitch to Connecticut. And the Connecticut educators, we can bring them on. We've got a huge thing coming up on St. Patrick's Day, but we can draw you in there.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. We'd love to join in.
So are you did you say you are bootstrapped at the moment?
We are bootstrapped, yes.
Do you need funds? Who doesn't?
who doesn't? Yeah, we're lucky enough that bootstrapping is working very well for us at the moment, but obviously it would be naive to think that funding wouldn't help us accelerate.
Because again, isn't it a land grab as usual?
Yes, because you've
got a great idea. Just get out there as ASAP.
Yeah, it's a great idea and it's a somewhat crowded market. And obviously funding helps with marketing, obviously bringing on a bigger team, building out more features, more product, talking to customers more.
And the team is based in... Am I talking to the team?
Everywhere. No, I'm a very small part of really an exceptional team. So we have people in Leash. Ben is in Springfield.
Springfield, Massachusetts, yeah.
Yes. We have...
Just to tell you a little story about Springfield, Massachusetts, because I happen to know it. My dad was from Waterville and County Kerry. Mm-hmm. If you emigrated from Waterville and County Kerry to the United States, you would end up in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Waterville is a great spot.
Well, there you go now. Yeah. And you can tell your pal there that Waterville asks after him.
He'll be listening in tomorrow. Spain, Sweden.
I love this. Thailand. This is mad in a great way.
Yeah, well, it's something a lot of your guests have said. It's all a network. So, like, when we came up with this idea, really, I'm a firm believer that when, throughout your working career, you come across maybe one person in every job or two jobs where you're like,
I like him, like her.
If I start my own company, that'll be the first person I talk to.
Oh, this is ideal. What a segue.
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm going to ask you next?
Right.
Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Who would I hire in a heartbeat? I have two.
That's okay. You're allowed to have two. Yep.
Obviously, like a lot of your guests, the father would be one.
He's okay.
It seems to be a theme.
But then again, I suppose, because you've lived with them, you've learned from their knee, literally.
Exactly. Yeah. So my dad is just probably the most patient man ever. That's where I get my patience from, is from him. And
what does he teach and where? You may as well give him a shout out.
He teaches in the De La Salle in Kilbarrick.
Yeah.
And he's not actually in a teaching role at the moment. I think he's working in liaison.
Okay.
But maybe that's changed with COVID.
Okay. And anyway, your dad is number one.
Number one. And then sticking with educators.
You better name your dad.
Mike as well.
Dever.
Yeah, Dever.
If I called him Dever, he'd kill me, would he?
I don't think he'd mind too much. I'm sure he's been called worse.
And your second?
Second is sticking with the team of educators. I had this teacher in junior cert cycle. I wasn't a great student. And
you've done all right, PhD.
Yeah, well, she's part of the reason is I wasn't great and I got a B or an A. I can't remember in my junior cert. And I saw her outside, so I went up to her and I was like, thanks.
In what?
In English. She was an English teacher, Miss Clark. And I went up to her and I said, thanks. Thanks so much for getting that for me. And she said, that's nothing to do with me. It's all you. And after junior cert cycle, like that was super empathetic. And after junior cert cycle, I changed to a different school. The school my dad teaches in, De La Salle in Kilbarrick. And it kind of stuck with me. It was kind of to own what I'd done well.
Yeah.
And I think that helped me do more things well. And
you better name her.
Yeah, Miss Clark, Caroline Clark.
Caroline Clark.
Caroline Clark. She teaches, she's principal, I think, of, I don't know the name of the school, but it's in Skerries.
Fantastic. Well, we'll send out a note or at least social media to Caroline Clark.
Lovely. Skerries
in a secondary school, I take it.
Yeah, secondary school, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very good.
And they're the two I'd hire in a heartbeat. that level of empathy and kind of insight into someone not being sure of themselves and giving them the push.
Yeah.
That's stuff like that is essential to have in a company.
And now a founder of happyteams.io.
Happyteams.io.
I won't ask you what .io stands for, because I know you don't know. but that is Michael Dever. Yeah. Michael Dever.
It's all right. It's all right. Okay. Either one works.
And if anybody wants to find you, they will find you at?
Happyteams.io.
Okay. And that is it. So therefore, from That Great Business Show, episode 24, the stars were out again today, because Keith Stars was today's uber-committed sound engineer. Peter Rice will drop in some bits and pieces later on to make us Ireland's best-sounding sound podcast by far. And as we heard earlier, not a week has passed in the last 6 weeks that I haven't got a fantabulous guest or two from Paula Fitzsimons, boss at Going for Growth program, at the Acorns program, and at the Back for Business program. And she's done it again, as you heard, by sending me Sinead Doherty and Tara Beattie. Super sleuth and Ireland's biggest earner, Bob Hamilton, suggested Giles Newsome, and our own CMO, Maeve Newsy, recommended talking to Michael Dever. Mille beches to you all. And if you know any other great businesses that deserve to be highlighted on thatgreatbusinessshow.com, go straight to the website and click share your story. There's a little button there for that. And finally, our thanks to our sponsor, De Facto Shave. Try their world's best shaving oil for a week, and I swear you will never, ever, ever go back to the horrid old shaving foam. Buy it online now and tell me what you think, please. That is it from me, Conal O'Moran, and we will talk again next week on That Great Business Show. Slán tamall.